So, oh, it's a small group, but maybe we should do introductions anyway. So, take it away.
I'm Janet from Clark County.
I'm Lori Lebowski. I'm Vancouver City Council.
I'm Sharia. I'm from the community.
Mavis Nichols, Battleground School Board. Bridger McLean, community.
I'm Kelly Molina. I'm the Homeless Programs Coordinator with Clark County.
Rebecca Rice, Clark County.
And Samantha Whitley with Clark County.
Perfect. Welcome, everybody.
Do we have a forum?
Do we have a
forum? We do.
I love the way our quorum set. So the next action is to be made with us and any errors of our missions that you could see.
I'll move for approval of minutes
for a second.
Thanks, okay.
All in favor of the motion to adopt the main amendments?
Aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
There's no call.
We can do it fabulous. We're ahead of schedule. We've got 2 minutes.
Okay, the emergency food and shelter program phase three.
Aye.
Sorry to wait.
So the Phase 35 announcement was published in the Columbian and the Oregonian on June 20th. The applications were due Thursday, June 28th by 5, and we received Salvation Army of Clark County, Janus Youth Program, Society of St. Vincent de Paul, YWCA of Clark County, and Clark County Food Bank. And so there is a meeting tomorrow with the FSP board where we will approve allocation percentages. So, go ahead.
So we have one vote on the board.
Yeah. So you all need to vote to determine how you want to allocate.
Tomorrow, like it's a regional.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's regional. And so last year the CAB voted to have 60% for emergency shelter and 40% provided food assistance.
Didn't we change that later on now?
That was the final thing that you changed it to because we decided not to do rent assistance since we had such a small
amount. Oh,
we
changed it to that.
I think it was like 30, 40, 20 originally. Yes.
I think it was
40, 30, 30.
It was 60, 30, 10. 30 to rent assistance. But we still have quite a bit of rental assistance
in the community. So what is the greatest need right now?
I would say that it would be the same as last year, the emergency shelter or the food assistance.
Yeah, and I keep referring to a meeting I was at where they said there was none for county because rental assistance.
There was no rental assistance for a county?
That the city had lots of money.
So they have their affordable housing fund,
right,
which infused a lot of extra dollars, but the dollars that we oversee go into all county residents, so it doesn't matter if they're Vancouver or outside of Vancouver.
So that was, were you there, Council, for the homeless presentation? Because I was surprised, but I'm sure it was just the way it was said. So the action you would like us to take today is to discuss the percentage allocation and vote in favor of it. So 60-40 is the recommendation. 60
right.
Emergency shelter and 40
for food. And then also, so we have to, we were not approved for to receive the federal allocation, but we are going to request an appeal. So that we are going to receive some state set-aside funds, which is going to be $14,215. And then...
That's the total amount in this?
That's for just the state set-aside. And then we're going to appeal for our federal allocation.
So what was the reasoning for denying, the federal government had to deny?
We didn't meet all of the benchmarks. So
there's three different benchmarks that they put for each jurisdiction. And traditionally, we have met those benchmarks, but mm-hmm. in the last, is it every 3 years they look at it?
No, it's every year. The last 3 years, we haven't met. I think the unemployment rate is one of them.
That
we don't meet.
Is it
because our unemployment rate is too high?
It's too high.
Or too low?
It would be too low. Yeah, it'd be too low, I would assume.
I said employment rate.
Oh, employment, not unemployment.
You're right.
But yeah.
So we should be happy.
And when we were able to appeal how much we received.
Yeah, we asked for what our normal annual allocation had been, which was like $212,000, and that's what we received roughly the 1 year that we got the appeal.
And the probability of getting the appeal approved this year, do you have any feeling on that?
I don't understand how the national board works, but what I can tell you is that the every year when we do the state set aside, there's like 10 or 13 counties that we apportion out about 9 to 14,000 apiece, and two or three of them every year don't ever respond, don't do anything. And so I'm guessing if that holds true nationwide, that they have all that money on hand in the pot that they, I never knew until the people from the East Coast, their headquarters, came out to Portland on a fluke meeting, and I got to know the gal. I said, oh, we were really bummed that Clark County didn't get our, there's no word anywhere about that you could file an appeal. So this gal that I just happened to meet, she was like, well, why don't you just file an appeal? I was like, yes, I will.
guidelines, and this is how it works, and this is how you can use the funds, and this is through FEMA, and there's like hardly any documentation on any of it. So
that was something we raised, and that's why we asked for a copy of the application, because it isn't, there are different strings attached to this, and it's not county or state money, and somebody else is making the decision, and some of the criteria that we have for state funds don't apply to it. So it's an opportunity for potentially other organizations to apply, but it seemed to be really hard. It's not a set application form that they can go 1, 2, 3, 4, zap it off.
I'm pretty sure it's the same application that's been done every year.
Yeah, this is the application.
So in all that stuff you sent me, I could never find that straightforward thing. So my only suggestion is next year, I don't know how far ahead we know about this, but I think it would be really neat to publicize it so that more organizations see it. You know, maybe putting it in the nonprofit network newsletter and putting the word out, because the little ad in the paper following that link did not get into there.
And is it the Salvation Army that's responsible?
They used to be, but Steve stepped down as the sheriff.
And Michael said that you guys did it, which is why you did it. So
this year, is that?
Well, Steve did run the ad for us.
Yeah. He's already set that up.
Yeah. Because the ad wasn't very clear, and I saw on Facebook somebody had said something about wanting to apply, and Kate came in and said, this is the EFSS.
Yeah.
EFSP funding. So I'm just saying that it really wasn't clear that maybe it's a way we could spread.
Yeah.
And so the applications on 14,000, it's clearly not worth it. But if you're going to add 200,000 to it, then it's like a. Mm-hmm.
So in the ad, it did say that they could contact me for more information. So I did have.
Yeah.
I had a few other organizations that contacted me for information, but they never applied.
Right.
They didn't. So.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, you know, if the application form was front and center, it would be good. But we have a motion before us, right?
No, we made it.
Oh, boy. Okay, so we should have a motion before we discuss it.
Make a motion to approve the allocation as staff presented.
so the, that is the 60-40 split. Right?
Yes, 60% to shelter, 40% to food.
Okay, so I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Any more discussion?
Sorry, I had to do discussion, it's in oil.
Yes.
Usually motion, discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have anything more to add.
Yeah.
Good. And I'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Against? Okay, motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the draft report, we're taking that off.
Yeah, I apologize, I was hoping to have a draft ready at this meeting for the board to review and approve at the September meeting. But we were unable to get it put together, and we have to work with the communications department now when we do any mass publications, and so we're working with them to get the draft put together. And then, so what we will plan on doing, because this is an informational report, we will send it to you via email as soon as we can, and then we'll still vote to adopt it in September.
Yeah, because really we don't need to see that pretty down version.
Yeah, there's just not a version I can even send you at this point.
Okay.
We don't have the same software as our communications department does, so it makes it a little more difficult.
Okay, so moving right along, the funding outcomes report.
So this, we've updated this report a little bit. This is what you're used to seeing. This does not have any of the year-to-date totals in it. This has no funding amounts or totals. We redesigned it a little bit for you. We've had discussions internally with our contracts and our finance department, and they have requested that we move away from the term community funds, where we kind of put a bunch of funding underneath it and focus more on what funding sources are coming in. So contracts now are CSBG for the Community Services Block Grant Funds, Human Service Fund, HSF, CHG, which has already been separated out. So it is very similar as far as the information provided, the programs, the outcomes, what they're proposing in their to-date totals, along with their how much they've spent. But they're just broken up into blocks of what funding is the primary funding in that contract.
So we have no funding from either the general funds or the license fees or anything?
So the marriage license fee, we do have, that goes directly to the YWCA, but they also get house bill money, which, so that it's kind of lumped into that amount, because the house bill money, there's a lot more of it in it. And then general fund is the human service fund.
Which is, I mean, what programs is that?
So that funds the
community
housing resource center, the IDA volunteer lawyers program. Yeah, the IDA program.
So that's listed on the house bill?
It's under humans. Why does it say solutions fund? It should be human services fund.
Human service fund.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one.
Yeah, it's on the back of the first page.
So it doesn't.
I'm sorry? Because before it used to say, like, you had each fund across the top. No, this is not the fund report. This is the outcomes report. That report has not changed and will not change. And that's presented in May and November.
So what you did was separate, even if it's the same organization?
It's by funding source. Correct.
So do they break down, if this is an outcomes report, they get two sources of funding which have the same sort of outcome? Mm-hmm. Did they split that proposed out.
No, we went with whatever the primary funding was. So if they
couldn't add up this outcomes and come up with a total because some are duplicated because it's in.
They're not duplicated.
No,
so if a program is funded by Consolidated Homeless Grant and House Bills, whichever fund has the most amount of money in that program is where it's listed, and that's it. So if it has $100,000 of Consolidated Homeless Grant and $50,000 of House Bills, you will only see it under Consolidated Homeless Grant because that's what has the most funding.
So that's the outcome number, but it is listed as them getting some money from that second source.
You'll only see that when we present the funding report in November and May, that how the breakdown is. Here it is only listed one time with the total amount of outcomes for the contract.
Okay. So Janice, for example, I have no idea if this is true, might have some CHG and they might have a less amount of money that comes under a house bill, for example, and we would not see them listed as.
Correct. You're only going to see, and that is common. We use a lot of house bill money as administrative dollars, but you're only going to see them under Consolidated Homeless Grant with the total amount of outcomes for the total contract and our total program.
But we only see the amount of money for one source then. I mean, so they're going to do, Janice, for example, is only going to do 9 people for $67,000. But they might have 20,000 over here, and we don't know that. So they're
you'll
really
know that
doing
with
9
the May
people
and November
for 80.
Funding report.
Strength. Okay.
There's no way of breaking that out into an outcomes report that can give us some idea of what the funding level is. This funding is basically just to make sure that you can see that they are spending, they're on track to spend out for that program.
Right, but we don't see what they're spending out for on all the other programs they might have funding for under this list.
So I think I'm getting confused by what you're saying. If Janice has 8 different programs, they're listed 8 times for one for each program, but it's only listed under one main funding source, what their contract number is under.
And what their spending is only of that portion.
No, it's the total program. So of the $70,000 for the Council for the Homeless, the very first one listed on there, there is probably $5,000 in house bill money in that contract, but
sure.
It's $70,000 total.
And
so that's the total, which includes the house bill fund. That's
correct. $70,000 includes.
So it doesn't come, we don't know how much of that $70,000 would come from the homeless grant and how much would be from the house bill.
You'll know that at the May and November funding reports.
Okay.
It'll break it down. That's the one, that huge one that
right.
Rhonda presents that
sure.
shows exactly. We've always, this is not, that side of it has not changed.
Yeah.
At all, it's always been that way. We've always used house bill money
right.
to help with administrative costs for programs that we get, like Consolidated Homeless Grant, which do only provide 10% for admin. We know that's not enough for the nonprofits to run the programs, so we've always used house bill money to help pay for.
Great.
So I will follow up with the correct report that actually has their year-to-date totals, how much they've spent through March, and the outcomes that they've done through March, so that you'll see that. The actual, there. When I put the report together, I didn't see, I mean, it's the beginning of the year, but there wasn't anything that stuck out for me. As far as what their outcomes, their services.
And these are longer contracts, right?
These
so
are 18
end, they'll be ending July 2019.
Yeah, June 30th,
yeah.
2019. So we'll do our RFA. We'll start that later this year, and then the contracts will be in place starting July 1 of next year. So everybody will be on the same timeline.
Questions? 333 on their numbers over here. Are we sure those are each different, or could that be the same three?
It's the same households. So they are planning to serve three households, and they expect all three of those to be housed within 30 days of entry, and they expect all three of them to exit to permanent housing, and they're expecting that all three of those will not re-enter.
So they're not serving nine different households?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any way that we can know, as we look at these, if there's, for example, on the share, they have 1199, and then on share again, it's 250 and 150, so.
They're very different programs.
I know they are, but that's very difficult for anyone reading this who doesn't know they're different to understand which are more efficient or which are doing a larger service than others. So if I see, okay, it looks like Janice is doing nine, and oh my goodness, Cher's doing this many, and or even looking at the difference in numbers, there's 888 for 71,000 and 333 for 67,000. Anyone looking at that might have a hard time, I do, of understanding why these have such a range. What does it mean? What is it really telling me when I see these numbers? And I don't know how you could include that on a report. It seems like it would be very difficult, but it's.
Well, and there's, we could try to beef up the little descriptions, like the impact one, it's rapid, and it says it's rapid rehousing, which is a type of program, versus shares, which is permanent supported housing. So we try to include that in the description of the program. So it's there already. But it is difficult to put in here what is the difference between rapid rehousing and what is the difference between permanent supported housing.
Yeah, rather than complicate this, because it's nice and straightforward, it might be nice to have, and I'm sure it is there, and it's probably in that program report, the brief description, because, you know, for outsiders, the difference between rapid rehousing and permanent supported housing may not be clear. Not to outsiders, the insiders, too. So somewhere else, a key to this would be, and we do have it.
It's in the report to the community. There's a whole section that talks about what the different housing types are.
I guess what I'm saying, if I had it right, look alongside and say, okay, here's impact, go over here, say, oh, here's what impact's doing, here's what share's doing. If I had something that I put side by side with this to help clarify it, does that make sense?
Oh, we made it more complicated.
I'm still grappling with the annual proposed. So what you're saying, Rebecca, is that, for example, Janice youth programs, that's not helping a total of nine households.
It's only three. It's their proposed outcome.
Okay.
So with that piece, we could add into the description, like how many households or individuals they plan on. So some of them, like the Share Aspire says household served, and there's 11, and then nine of them will need, they expect nine to maintain or increase their income, and nine of them to remain housed for a year.
And that's so out of the 11?
Out of the 11. So we could, in the descriptions, add either the household or the number of individuals, depending on the type, or some are household focused, some are individual focused.
I think that would be helpful when you're evaluating a proposal, because it looks like perhaps nine people divided into the amount of money instead of three people divided.
Well, and one of the things I don't want anybody to do is put this as a cost analysis, because every program is different, and every especially type of service is different. So it is very much more expensive to serve a household through permanent supported housing than it is to help somebody with prevention services, right? And so we don't want to evaluate programs based on a cost per person basis, because that's just not fair based on what types of services are being provided. So we don't even want those.
I still see that you have to do some evaluation of the cost benefit analysis anytime you look at something, and even understanding that.
And in the proposals, there will be questions that will help break it down. So you can see, these are all the services that they're providing, these are the best practices that they're using. So you'll be able to do that within that application when you read through those. And that's where we're deciding who should get funded. So that piece will definitely be there. This is just looking at, are they meeting the outcomes that they proposed that they were going to do? So
I think you were to take, all right, and I'll go back to impact, the 888. What if you were to say on that top eight, say total eight, and then on somehow designate that the next two lines are the same eight, and I don't know whether you'd say out of those eight mm-hmm. will do this and eight will do that. Household served three, total three, and then somehow just indicate that those next threes refer to those first three.
Of these households,
yeah.
Exit from housing three, of these households do not re-enter within 6 months.
Yeah, something like that to indicate that these are the same three.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, to keep it to where we don't make this report too much longer, I'll have to play with that, so I might have to take one of the outcomes out, but I can definitely put in the total served and then take that of these.
Well, we have the total served in the top one.
Not on all of them, only on a couple. So
now you can.
Okay. So are they all cumulative like that? Or is
yes.
it just those ones?
No, they're all. All of yeah. them are of the totals served that they propose to serve. This is the outcome. This is how many households. Each line is separate and a piece of what the total households are individuals.
All right, if you look at HEN then, households and individuals. Individuals, that's a separate.
There's two different pieces of data that's collected
so
at different levels.
You can't look at share and say these are the same numbers. You can look at impact and say these three are the same people, but that's not true on share.
And the HEN,
that's what's confusing.
The HEN one is the only one that's like that. All the other ones are either all households or all individuals.
All right, go down to Columbia River Mental Health. That's the end again. All right, go to the next one, partners in
it's
career.
The back, the bottom one, the share one at the bottom is not.
That is because there's three components to
absolutely.
That program.
And that makes sense, but there's no cumulative effect. And
that's
clear then from the,
yeah,
the descriptor.
But
so that one's
but the ones where they're the same ones again, that's the ones
this is
where the, you know these numbers. I mean, this is really clear to me. And obviously it better be clear to you because otherwise you're gonna have to not that send you on another trip. But it's not clear to those who don't work with it on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's why I get confused a lot of times when I'm reading the reports, is because, okay, I don't know which of which. I don't work with it on a day-to-day basis. I only see it here. And if I can't interpret it here, and I'm fairly familiar with what's going on, how would anyone else who's not familiar with it? That's what I'm looking at. And
yeah,
so
I think what
I would say, what's clear and what isn't?
What's confusing is some are like that and some aren't. So long as we can know which ones are like that. Like, in several of them, it makes sense that they're two separate numbers because they're significantly separate programs. In some, it's a subset, like shares prevention. Households increase income 11, households exit permanent housing 10, households do not re-enter within 6 months of exit 11. So we've got more going out to, we've got fewer going out to permanent housing than we do who re-enter, which I think is pretty impossible, right? But there may be subtle distinctions there that I'm not getting. So, the next one, they seem to be different programs. Anyway, it's worth thinking about when you look at it. I think where there are a subset, even if it was indented, so
yeah.
You've got the total on the left and the others down the right, that would
or in parentheses.
Give us a clue. Yeah.
You could put on the...
Wouldn't apply to all of them, just those ones where it's the same families being tracked at different levels of service.
Right. Well, okay. I think it's definitely, you can add in a line that says, you know, total served, household or individuals, and that way you can see what that number is. And then add of those, so
yeah,
that it kind of says
like
that piece there.
Okay, the Columbia River Mental Health Supported Employment is a... You know, those are three different programs, or are some of those repeated on those individuals receiving?
No, that's the same thing. Where they propose to serve 75 individuals, so they're proposing that 38 would get direct job placements, that they would have 60 complete some sort of employment training, and that of those, at least 10 would be employed for 90 days.
So they're not. You can't add those three numbers up. That's what's hard for me.
Yeah. No, we can definitely look at how we and put that in there. If not putting it in the description saying this is what this program is proposing to serve that or
that.
As a line, its own individual line. Yeah, we can definitely take a
Does
look
that make
that.
Sense? Am I the only one that's
no you're not. I think I do agree that I guess I'm new to this, but I was thrown off a little.
Yeah, and it is hard. It's one of those we're trying to meet the org standard requirement of having a discussion of outcomes and finances at every meeting. And so we were trying to make what we had already done and kind of fit into that. And it always needs improvement. So, we'll go back and we'll add those two components and then revisit it. And, it's a living document.
Yeah,
because
it's all here. It's just... how we read it makes the difference.
Kelly, do you see it too? I mean,
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And it only applies to certain ones, only those ones which work with the same family through a series of steps, and we have outcomes for different steps. And it's only those, because in those cases, we want to know that the second and third line are subsets.
Yeah.
And I think it's extremely important to know that those three families all went through all the steps. That's critical information. So it needs to be there, but it needs to be clear which are which.
And it's how you would assess the program, that you do your site visits or contract review or whatever.
They only work with three families, but all three families did da 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 da. That's critical.
I also wanted to just mention as a reminder that the little stars next to the names are those that have completed a risk assessment within the last 3 years, where we've done an agency risk assessment over the last 3 years. I keep looking this way, and I still apologize. So there's a risk assessment that is required through as part of our department policy to assess the agency to make sure that they haven't had any major issues within the agency financially or structurally. So those have had one done within the last 3 years. If it does not have a star on it, it means it has been flagged, and so we will be doing a risk assessment. All of the agencies that we contract with in this next funding round, we are required to do a risk assessment before we contract with them. So no matter what, they will go through a risk assessment process before we sign a new contract with the next RFA process.
So it's an risk of the organization.
Correct.
And you said you have the year-to-date totals, but they just...
I'm not sure what happened. This report, there is a version that has the numbers in it, and so that's... I will make these corrections, these changes, so it'll take me a little while. We are on fiscal year end, and I have 30 invoices sitting on my desk. I know she has like another 10 or 15 that have to be reviewed right away. So it'll take me a few days to get this to you guys, but yes, I will get that. I'll make these changes and make sure the numbers are in it, and we'll send it. I'll send it out to you guys.
We're trying to know when the RFPs come out, right?
I'm sorry.
I say that one time?
We're talking about the applications for funding that are be coming out.
Those will be coming out later this year.
Will we see those before they're given to the organizations?
Yes, I have had a plan for the September meeting, and the applications are being released October 1.
Households will reduce barriers under Janice Youth Program, second one down.
On the second page?
Yeah, if you're not gonna go back.
On page 3?
Page 3.
What program, Janice Youth?
Youth households reduce.
Oh. Houring barriers?
Yeah.
You know?
I was trying to think of how to say it, and it was coming out as boring barriers, so I didn't think I wanted to
We work with them with all types of barriers, but
yes,
we don't like to call that one out. But yes, put in the year-to-date totals, there was nothing so far. The SOAR program, the main person has been out on maternity leave, so their numbers are a little bit low. She's due back in another 2 months.
September, yeah.
And so they've been having somebody pull double duty, so they've kind of able to focus much on the SOAR program as they typically would, but we expect those numbers to bounce right back. And I do want to let you know that the Salvation Army, the program that we have for the emergency dislocated funds for when a house is evicted due to code violations, the Salvation Army has requested that they not manage that contract any longer due to some other things going on within the agency. So we've asked Council for the Homeless. We thought that was a good fit. People call the Council for the Homeless for housing assistance to see if there's... So it was kind of a natural fit for them, so they've taken over that contract. Same thing, it'll only be used when it's a code violation. And we've asked the council to make sure they notify all the different code enforcements for all of the cities so that they're aware not to call the Salvation Army, to call the council. The Salvation Army will obviously also refer them to the Council for the Homeless if they get a phone call for that.
So is that just by referral from code enforcement type offices? I mean, that sort of thing.
So it has to be a code via code violations, but it could be the family call. I mean, it doesn't have to be the code enforcement office. They usually are the ones that would say, we're very sorry, but due to the living conditions, we do need to affect you. Here is some resources, and that is one of them. It does not happen very often.
Well, I'm just going, oh my God, if they all went into that Highway 99 trail park, they could issue code violations. We could use that fund up in 2 weeks.
Oh, it would, yeah, it would be gone.
Did you? Nobody enforces code. Okay, so do we typically just adopt this report?
You don't even have to adopt it. It's just an information.
Moving right along.
Yeah.
Any more questions? Thank you. I know it's hard to present complex and easy to understand formats, and that's why we've been picky. Peggy, City of Vancouver Housing Fund update.
Great. So some of you that live in Vancouver know that in 2016, the voters approved a levy that is to be used to provide housing, dollars for housing for folks that are 50% of median or less. So it was a property tax levy, and it's for 7 years. It generates $6 million a year that the city allocates. And the city chose to not create a whole new department to do this. So it's simply we are trying to roll this process into the CDG and home program rather than we took a very small percentage of the money for admin, and we even try to give that admin to the agencies when we can. So it was designed to be a very streamlined sort of project. So we don't have any really creative reports or anything yet to be able to provide you all with. But we're working on some of that. We do have a, go to the city website, we do have a, they call it a dashboard, so you can click on that and see where the money's going. Anyway, we have 1 year under our belt, not even quite 1 year. So we have awarded money to, and I will give this report to Rebecca.
Okay.
And they can send it out to you all, and you can go find it on the city website too. So all the projects are approved by city council, so it's pretty streamlined. We send out an application process, people apply, we have a very small group of folks that review those and, prioritize them and make recommendations to council. So the first round, what we decided to do was award, as we had about 8 projects apply, and we decided to do some working around that we could fund them all, and they're all new construction projects. So the result is, at the end of the day, when all these projects end up being built, we'll have 237 new units, with 80 of those directly funded through this project. So it leverages a lot of other money. We also have a portion of this fund that we use, we call it preservation, so we're able to provide funding to agencies or individuals that want to preserve their house. So if they want to, maybe they want to rent to somebody that's 50% median, and they're currently renting to people that are maybe higher and they want to lower their rent, they need a new roof. In order to do that, we're able to provide funding to do that. And we have about, we have currently only about 3 projects in that category. Our rents are so high right now, and people have no, there's really no need for people to come to government to ask for funding in order to rent to folks that have lesser income. So I don't know if that makes sense to you all, but right now people don't need any assistance to be able to find renters. Right?
Yeah.
It's renters that need assistance, landlord stuff. So we're finding the best use of the money right now is to use for new construction. And then we also have a homelessness prevention piece, where we provided about $1.5 million to Council for the Homeless and the Vancouver Housing Authority. And what they're doing with that money is providing services and rental assistance to folks. So they're taking them, Housing Authority is, they have a huge wait list, and the Housing Authority is taking some of those folks and providing a year's worth of rental assistance through this fund, and then they will go into permanent housing provided by the Housing Authority. And the Council for the Homeless is using the money when folks, they've only just started, they're only in their second month. So there are people that call in to Council for the Homeless that are either homeless or short on their rent, they're able to use this money for that. So they haven't done this sort of service before at this level, so we're still trying to work out some of the details, but it involves, I believe, 7 other agencies, so they're working with 7 other agencies to provide a different level of service and rental assistance that they haven't done before. And then we just released it's a pretty simple RFP for shelter improvements. So we have $600,000 that's available to the community that they either want to improve a current shelter or even start a new shelter. Now, I know $600,000 really isn't a lot of money to start a new shelter, so we're anticipating that it would either be the current shelter providers that need upgrades to their shelters, or maybe somebody that's has a house and wants to start maybe a small shelter. There's some movement to have smaller shelters than larger ones. So
is that within the city limits?
It has to be used within the city limits. It's funded by property owners,
right.
Folks that voted, or when we did the outreach, people were really concerned that this money be just go online and find it. We get calls from people that are, you know, that we get calls from people that are already renting to folks that are low income and they don't need a new roof, things like that. But we haven't gotten a lot of folks that are interested. We reach out to through the Rental Association of Clark County, and then there's also another rental association group. Not much interest in that part yet. People are interested in rental assistance, and we've gotten landlords that called us because they want one of their residents might need rental assistance and they don't want to evict them. As far as us going in and doing repairs in order for them to keep renting to lower income folks, I've gotten very many people that are interested in that part.
Are the applications advertised in the paper,
Yeah, we advertise them in the paper. We do press releases. We're the city of Vancouver, as you might know, is really big on press releases. We send it out through the, when we have an RFQ, we send it out through the Council for the Homeless, newspaper. We put it on our website. I try and do a lot of outreach. There's always ways to do more and better outreach.
So is some of this money funding the new day center?
No, it's not. The day center is all funded through city general funds.
Okay.
We're looking at the possibility, it's not up and running yet, but we're looking at the possibility of asking city council, and all of these things are done through city council that they approve. Want to make sure that Lori knows that.
I know, I'm like, it's coming my way.
So, what was your question again?
The day center.
We were planning on, after it gets up and running, we'll work with city council if we need to use some of this funds for the operation. But right now, the day center, right. The current remodeling is all funded. And I can talk about that too if you guys are interested. Maybe the next time I could bring up the spreadsheet that talks about that a little bit more. But the day center is the construction is a lot of it's being donated, and what's not being donated, we'll use community development block grant funds for to go ahead and finish out whatever construction we need. We also have a little bit of money from the state that we have that will help with the construction. The purchase was all general fund, so city just used the general fund to do that.
So the operation
is going to be funded. It's a combination of city, county, and the housing authority.
And then, aren't there some private funds for?
We have some private funds for the construction and some private funds for the operation.
So, where do county funds come from to go in there? Or what are we doing with
the house bills?
The house bills money?
The city has worked out with the county house bill. It's some of the deed recording fees.
So, would that show up on this?
No. Because it hasn't been in the future, yes.
So it's through the Shares Day Center program is what is currently on there.
Okay.
But next year it would show up.
Or it might increase that number.
Okay.
It will come directly to show up.
Okay.
Okay, I have another question.
You probably want to know about the timeline on that.
No. My other question was, so we do CSBG funds, but there's also the Urban Policy Council. Urban County Policy Board that has funds that go into this project?
The City of Vancouver has CDBG and home funds.
Okay.
The Urban County Policy Board.
I always get mixed up because a lot of their programs sound like very similar.
Urban County Policy Board opted opted many years ago not to use our CDBG funds for social services because we had the community services block grant and the house bill fee dollars already going to the same areas, you know, going for the county's use. And so we've elected, or they've elected, to do just the more infrastructure, new construction, renovations with those funds, rather than social services.
I can argue with that. That's interesting. But, for instance, in Washougal, we had a CDBG grant to renovate, rebuild the families.
Mm-hmm.
The family center a few years
ago. Oh, several years ago, yes.
But that was under CDBG.
Yes.
But it had to be social service oriented, the center serving social service.
Correct. It was construction.
But it's, yes.
Construction.
It's a little bit.
It's not the operations.
See, I get kind of ticked when I look at CDBG grants, which are, you know, being used for sidewalks and lighting projects and things rather than socially needed.
So the CBG funds still have to be used for areas that are serving individuals earning less than 80% of the area median income. So it's not going into high income neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
CAMAS frequently uses theirs to replace water and sewer laterals, along with their funding to work for houses that are low income.
So for example, CDBG for sidewalks, you look at the, don't you look at the census blocks and the income? They break it down by census block and they look at the income. So as you're saying, it's in a low income area, but may not get the sidewalks or redevelopment or road projects.
Okay, that's good. So when is it planning to open?
Well, we, like I said, we have, C. John is donating the architectural work and the construction.
He's
and
amazing.
they're really busy. It takes a lot longer than we use volunteer services. So we
I would just add that there's a lot of development going on in general,
mm-hmm.
and in general it is difficult to get contractors, whether you pay for them
absolutely.
Or
yeah.
donate it.
So they anticipated, you know, what the
mm-hmm.
owner of C.E. John is saying is that we'll be able to operate in October.
This
so,
year?
Mm-hmm.
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 Amazing. That would
yeah.
be wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it, thank you for saying
yeah.
this year, because it's like, for me, it feels like really October. I mean, we've had this building for, because we've had it since January. It's really hard to.
That's probably pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know, to have a building where you're making
a lot of time, really, between January and October for major renovations.
Mm, yeah. Well, we're only renovating the very. I mean, if you guys, if anybody wants to go see that building, just give me a call. I'm happy to take you on a tour. But the very front, you remember it's the old Fred Meyer's,
right.
from Fish and Wildlife. So the very front. Close to the parking lot, we're renovating the first 6,000 square feet of that will be for the day center. And then we have a process where we'll be working with the community and the neighborhoods on what's going to happen with the rest.
And fourth lane.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, right on fourth lane, right across from the Walmart there. Or so
mm-hmm.
that.
I just drove past.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Would that be something maybe a future meeting? We have it
then?
Have it, I mean,
it would be a little while out. There's
okay.
going to be a lot of things going to get prepared
That's
for
true.
The request for application.
Very true.
But we could look at it. It would be after the open, but.
We should get him to donate a building in Hazel Dell.
Yeah.
He's really, I mean, he did that whole shopping area.
Yeah.
Park Rose and that. He's an amazing.
Mm.
There's so much space in the other mallish area.
Mm.
But that's not owned by him. But he has donated space to the consignment shop and community outreach. So.
You mentioned there's a small group that reviews the
Correct.
Applications. Is that community members or is it staff?
Mm-hmm.
Or
it's a staff does a first review and then it's community members.
Okay.
city staff, I believe, is set on that. We have several different community review groups that, and they're always a mixture of staff and community members.
Okay, moving right along. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll, like I said, I'll send this to Rebecca.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and I'll send it out when I send out the updated report.
Advocacy Task Force. Ooh, it says me. Actually, we've done quite a few things. And yeah. My goal, and then I'll turn it over to you to say what we actually. My goal is to get a package of stuff together that as we get new members, we can sort of kick off more organized advocacy response, whether it's local community outreach on what the county does in terms of helping the homeless or low-income families, and this sort of statewide advocacy that we may need during the session. So that's sort of compiling all those bits of paper. Rebecca, Kelly's been pulling together a lot of stuff, and I think we're moving along. We've had a few meetings.
So. Yeah, at the last meeting we approved several documents that we've been working on. A CAB letterhead for members to write to officials and elected officials. An intro email, introductory like template email, an outreach list of organizations to contact to tell them about the CAB and the needs in the community. And then an advocacy email alerts list where it will have the links that you can click on to sign up for their emails, their email alerts. So and there's just a couple of changes. I've made those changes, and then we'll be getting them out to the rest of the CAB.
Maybe we can tie this into, do we have any updates on applications and for new members?
Yes, I can do that. I brought that information. So we advertised, we did the public service announcements, which was picked up by the Columbian, and they had a special little blurb in the business email that they send out, a special email distribution list for that. Went to all of our stakeholders that we have on our distribution list. It went out to previous interested members that have applied in the past if they were in a district that was open position. We haven't been to as many community meetings as we normally would be in, so but every time we go to a community meeting, we mention that it was out open. We sent it to you guys. We did, went through that whole outreach plan that we.
I think you've gone to the reflector.
It went to, yeah, that's part of the news release. It went out on Nextdoor, our Facebook, and through Twitter, so it went out there. And the due date for applications was on Friday. As of today, we have received zero applications. Oh, I did the letter specifically to elected officials. Janet mailed those out for me. There were quite a few that we sent. Zero for the elected officials positions. Very disappointed with that. So we will do more, and we will re-release specifically for elected official positions. We had one application each for the low-income representatives. One is a complete application. One was a partial application, so I've reached out to that person to say, please send us the rest of the information, so I'm waiting for that. We had four applicants for each of the community representative positions, and one from each of those did not send their resume, so I've reached out to them saying, hey, please send me your resume. Once I have the low-income representatives and the community representative stuff, then I will send it out for the review to start narrowing it down. Obviously, the low-income representatives, there's not going to be very much lower reducing down, but the community reps will want to pick the three that go through the interview process, and then we'll move forward with the process there. And then I will work on this week doing a new news release specifically targeting elected officials, and we will resend the letters out that we had sent before and really try to get some information. So if you know anybody that's in districts 2 and 3 that are elected officials. We also got several applications for community representative positions that are already filled. So we let them know that they're not open, but I asked them if they're elected or a low-income representative. We have those positions available. So,
so how many are we looking for again?
6 total. So 2 in each.
2 in each.
Each
okay.
category. Yes.
It seems like for elected officials that Vancouver has a process for having somebody.
So we have it in the bylaws. So the city of Vancouver has a position on the board, and then Lori fills that position currently.
Right.
And hopefully we'll continue with a successful campaign. And then, but the other districts, we do not have a designated spot. But because so many of the funds that we have go and affect the city of Vancouver, that there's a designated spot for them.
Maybe we should designate. No, we have enough spots to designate.
Yes,
everybody.
Yeah. Right. And the city of Battleground used to have somebody that they would just appoint to the board. They did that for many years, and then once that mayor left, they just let it go.
I kind of suspect that because they've changed mayors 2 or 3 times since then, that they're just not even on the radar.
Well, Battleground's not one we have open right now. So, you're fulfilling the
position. But I would think that because I'm pregnant, because it's changed, I just bet it's fallen off the radar totally.
Well, and it was never an actual, unlike the
city
of Vancouver.
It's not a set position.
Correct. But they were just for years very happy to appoint and have somebody on the board, which made it a lot easier. We did reach out to the cities in districts 2 and 3 specifically. You know, those letters went out specific to them. I reached out to the Cowlitz Indian Tribe, and we actually got an application for one of the other positions, not an elected position, through that outreach there. So
I'm reaching out to Paul Greenlee.
I was just thinking of him. He's on so many.
He at least might know somebody that, if he isn't willing to do it, but he may know somebody. Because he was pretty upfront about, well, I can talk to these council members, but please don't listen to you. So,
yeah, and anytime any contacts that board members can make that know of somebody that would be interested, please forward that email. And
if you talk to Steve Stewart at Richfield, the city manager, I would think for District 2, Richfield would be a good one of the city council members.
Yeah, and I reached out to Mayor Onslow, because he's on the Urban County Policy Board it's not mayor anymore,
right.
Councillor Onslow, and so I'm trying to reach out to any of the councillors there that might be interested.
Okay.
And no response at this point, but like I said, I will re-advertise specifically. We will make it more, the news release will be more specific to elected officials. We will keep trying.
Okay, thank you. Do we have anything else to say about advocacy?
I sort of did, don't I?
No, I think that was it.
Legislative update.
Ken.
I'll take this one. With Michael being out, so there hasn't been a whole lot of anything going on. The president's budget, you know, was released a while ago, and it's, you know, dead on arrival. I will say that there has been some fight for the community services block grant, and we've been sending out those alerts that have been kind of keeping up to date on what's going on. They had originally, both the House and the Senate had put in their kind of original budgets that they would increase the community services block grant to $750 million, which is, right now it's about $715. And I believe on the House side it stayed at $750 in their final recommendation, but in the Senate side it dropped down. So outreach that we can do to any of the senators is really needed to say, hey, why can't you do $35 million out of this? All this, not all this, but there's extra funding in the budget because the ceiling caps have been lifted, taken away, but increased so that the military budget could be, defense budget could be increased. So there's extra money on the table, and why is it not going to, you know, community services block grant? So any advocacy that you can do on that side would be really helpful. We're still hopeful that they'll increase it to the 750. They'll meet at the House's recommendation, but it will wait and see.
And I sent out an email alert to the CAB last week about this matter, so
I just didn't get to do it.
Yeah.
And Senator Murray is on the budget, so she is one to really reach out. And if she's an advocate, but you know, always hearing from constituents that yes, this is where we want to see the additional funding go.
Okay, so we don't. We're going to reschedule the trauma informed.
Yes, so there was a mishap, and Renata was not able to make it today, so she was wondering if she could come at our September meeting. I have Lydia scheduled right now for the life skills, but I'm wondering if the trauma-informed might be more appropriate before the application.
I think it would be, in my own opinion, I think it would be better to hear from Lydia first, because I think that what Renata would follow up with would add to what Lydia has to say.
Okay. The other one that's high on the list is the best practices and doing an RFA overview.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one I know is very important. And that one needs to be done before you guys start seeing the applications, which will be first thing beginning of the year. So maybe I don't.
So if we do September, November,
we need monthly meetings.
Pardon me?
We need monthly meetings.
September. Okay, we've rescheduled Lydia a couple times already, right?
No, she has made a request not to be in the summer. That's the only thing that she's not been rescheduled. She requested being.
Okay. I thought she was on there. All right, I guess, maybe this is a good year.
Maybe there was. No, I can't remember.
I think there was one time when we were going to put her on and something came up. My suggestion is that we see the RFP forms probably in September.
That will be in September. It has to be in September.
Then I would schedule Lydia for the next meeting.
November.
Because I think we need to get those, see those forms and see if there's anything we'd like to have on them that aren't on there.
Well, and the best practices is going to be one that you'll, and the review of, an overview of how to review the applications.
But that would work in January.
We can do that.
I need to look at my RFA timeline to see when I was planning to release the applications for you guys to make sure we stick on that.
Well, we have timeline. We usually have the training session in January.
Yeah, we have the whole day.
The whole day. And to me, that would be a good time to spend extra time on those.
The RFA.
Uh-huh. What do you think? I'm just giving you what I'm looking at for.
So rather than having a retreat, we would have the RFQ, RF, whatever you call it, training.
Best practices, how to review
best
an RFA.
Practice, how to review, and we would at that point have submissions. Or
they're due in December, so.
Right.
But the staff has to go through the review, make sure that all the information is there.
Yeah.
I
that's
just don't
time
remember
that
I made timeline off the top of my head.
So if we do that best practices one
in
January in combination. So that leaves us September,
November.
And we've got anything
else? Well, September would be to look at the forms.
Yeah, but that's
we'll
just
do that
a discussion review.
Right.
It's not an hour long thing.
So we could do Lydia in September
and best and trauma informed care.
So let me go back to Renata and see if she's available in November.
Where's Renata working?
We'll most likely available at either of the meetings, because she would already be planning on being here anyways. So I'll check in with Renata, see if she's available in November. If that, then that'll work out great. If not, then we'll go with her in September. And we'll move the best practices to the January.
I think, to me, the best practices in January, when we are preparing to look at these proposals, really makes
sense. And that's, we would have wanted that rather close. That's why we're making it in November. So that makes sense. Yeah.
But I'd like to have longer time to do that. I'd like to have enough time to really maybe have some sample proposals that are good and some that are so bad, and say, here's what it, here's how you can look at something and know this is one you'd recommend and this is one you wouldn't. So, you know, for good training, I think we need that.
Yeah, that would give us more time to kind of take time to look at.
I don't know whether other people are, if we have new people on the board by then.
Which we will. We will have at least the community reps and hopefully the low-income reps.
And I think it would be very helpful to have that kind of training for them.
So I think if we do the RFQ, I always go for RFQ, the RFP in September and Lydia in September, November, will we have new people on board by September or November?
Depends on how fast it takes to schedule them for the interview. And
so say we have new people November.
November, definitely.
Right, so trauma-informed care training is ideal to start, followed up by January. We have the review process and best practices.
Yeah, so it'll just depend on Renata's availability. That's
sure.
Her statement on there.
Can you tell me when the January meeting is going to be?
It's the second Tuesday.
Second Tuesday.
Yes, ma'am. I can get that to you. January 8th. Okay. And then I'll look for a location. How did you guys like the location that Luke Jensen?
It was okay.
Was that, did you like it better or worse than the previous year where it was in that modular building?
Over at 78th Street?
Yeah.
It's
the nicer thing is that it's not as far as a walk to the parking lot. For the modular building where Luke Jensen, you have to walk a little ways, but I think the facilities at Luke Jensen are a little bit nicer. We can't have it at the, or we don't want to have it at the PSC, and we can't have it here. So,
it seems like
neither one of us cost us anything, is that
correct? Those are free.
I would
like
say whichever is available because I don't care what we are, I care more the quality of the training and the location of the training.
Those are the fairgrounds.
Jensen or 78th Street.
The which?
Luke Jensen or 78th Street.
That's very nice for me because it's convenient.
It's not hard to get.
Well, it's for me. I have to leave from where we meet because, and it's easier for me to be closer to 205 because I work at the airport. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I will look into getting those. I'll try the Luke Jensen complex first and see if that's available, and then if not, I'll go with the meeting room at the 78th Street.
And when would this meeting be?
So January 8th.
Okay.
And not 9 to 4 is what we've been doing for an all-day retreat.
I'm trying to remember, is there heat there? And
yes.
Oh, that's what I care about.
Both of them are.
The both places work fine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
The same thing. I mean, it's just brighter and aerial.
At the Little Jensen,
I agree.
That's
there's also the, if you run out of places, the transit center at
Fisher's.
That's quite a nice ice cream.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And also the community room at the library at the first chamber.
Yeah, that one's a little bit more difficult. They're a little bit more apprehensive on food being brought in and who they have just set.
I know we
ate
the
other one that I forget about sometimes is ESD 112 has some very nice rooms. And stuff, so.
Out on 78th because of the location, it's just more central for the rest of us who don't live in
London. And I said the fairgrounds because they
Okay, yeah, but that's great, because there's lots of parking. And the room is nice.
Yeah, I will start looking into those and see what's available. Luke Jensen is just super, I know the contact to get it reserved.
Yeah.
And they know we have reserved it several times, so they're like, oh, okay, yeah, and then I don't have to deal with anything again.
So, go with what's easiest. Has anybody any issues they'd like to raise? Talk about?
No issues. Just open for them.
Well, why is issue got a negative connotation these days? Issues can be positive. Oh, and I said, so nobody has anything they want to talk about. Okay. I see there's conference feedback.
Yes. I just added that in there at, you know,
thank you.
If anyone needs blueberries, call me. First thing today.
We always like to give the attendees an opportunity to provide feedback from the conference.
So I have some comments. First of all, thank you for sending me and whatever. It was well worth attending. It's interesting that this is the second year I've been, so this is sort of dominant theme, probably each year. Last year was all around tiny homes. But this year, what I'm finding fascinating, having worked with mental health on Medicaid, is how much of the conversation is around how Medicaid affects flexibility is moving towards supportive employment and supported housing, and that totally dominated, I think, most of the sessions that I dropped in on, and with very little discussion about actual mental health therapy and recovery, and more about how do we help people with mental health issues become self-sufficient and supported and that sort of thing. So I find it really interesting that I don't think I heard the word poverty very many times at all. I mean, there's an assumption that people with strong mental health issues are going to be lower income, but it strikes me a lot of our dollars are going towards people with mental health issues because the funding's there. You know, services tend to follow the funding, and it kind of worries me that the family that is really poor and struggling, who doesn't have mental health issues and has been sitting on VHA waiting list for 5 years, is the one that keeps dropping to the bottom of the list because we have all these special populations who have higher needs. So I just think it's something we should always watch out for. But there also should be a lot more money coming into supporting some of the services that we provide for people when they're eligible under Medicaid.
Yeah, they've really been working. It's a huge change and improvement for Medicaid to be able to do these support services. One thing, you know, this is the homeless conference, so that's the population that they're targeting, and there's a large population of people who are homeless that have a mental health issue.
Oh, yeah.
But I strongly recommend bringing, when they do the feedback, asking and recommending that there be more discussion about
mental health. No, I just think the whole field is shifting because it's an opportunity to get resources that weren't there before, because you can get a lot of peer support specialists who can work one-on-one with families, a program out of Cal that's finding supportive housing. I mean, it's pretty amazing some of the stuff they're doing. I'm not arguing.
And it's a demonstration grant. So biggest thing is that Washington State has to show that these dollars are well spent and they're actually saving Medicaid federal dollars in the end by providing these other support services. So it's like a pilot program. So that's why they're doing all of this advertising, like this is how we can use the funds and how we can't use the funds, because you can't use it for housing. But
I found it really interesting that Cher, for example, could be eligible to apply for Medicaid reimbursement if they have a licensed therapist on their staff somewhere. some of those services that we currently fund out of other dollars. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how much money it's going to free up for alternatively eligible families, because if they can build mental health, Medicaid for peer support, which is essentially case management and advocate, you know, family advocates, then you've changed the whole game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they're able to show through the demonstration grant. I always love the Wellness Conference. I think it's always very informative. There's usually like 8 to 10 sessions every session time, so there's a wide variety of things that you can participate in on a variety of topics. So yes, there were quite a few on the mental Medicaid demonstration grant. There were quite a few on inclusion and equity this year. They've always usually have a couple, but there was a little bit more emphasis on those. I went to one by one of the keynote speakers, and it was fantastic information. So I highly recommend, if you're able to go. They haven't released the dates yet, but it should be the third week of May next year, Tuesday, Wednesday. It was in Tacoma this year.
Is it Spokane next time?
So I'm not sure if it's in Tacoma or Spokane.
I think I heard some Spokane.
Was it?
Oh,
yeah.
Saying, yeah, next
year. Yeah. Yeah, so, yes. I thought I heard Spokane too.
Yeah.
And this was your first year going, so.
Yeah. I mean, the workshops and everything were great. I mean, very helpful and, Rebecca was saying there was lots of variety in workshops. There was a workshop, I think the workshops were an hour and a half, and there was, about seven, eight every session. It was,
I think there's three sessions a day. So, there's a lot, but it's definitely an overload.
Yeah.
It's so well organized, too. Mm-hmm.
And they have over 800 attendees every year, so it's not a small conference. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty large.
Do we have anything else on the agenda? I didn't realize I packed up to leave. I forgot that I should look at the agenda.
It's kind of a good thing that we didn't have the training, because we went over jammed into there.
I would not have asked any questions if we had the training. Next meeting, September the 11th, 8 till 10, right here, right?
Right here, same place.
I was listening for some reason on my answering machine on the phone at home, and I'm running through. There's a message from Kathy talking about the meeting being at the Luke Jensen Center, and I thought, oh my God. And it must have been on there from last January. But I couldn't prove it because I was just looking at the date of the message.
From Kathy? From Janet.
Okay. I always want to call you Kathy.
Because our previous way was Kathy, so that's why I was like, oh, is it that?
I have always been calling you Kathy. The one I couldn't find it on. But it was so weird because I couldn't prove whether it was all or not. So thank you very much, everybody.